have police photographing our license plates.
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. I'm Marcello Rolando. The mission of the Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal opportunity. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing the creative artist and political unity as solutions to our challenges. Welcome to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. My guest today is Wes Bellamy, and Wes holds a Master of Education. He's an educator at the Albemarle High School in Albemarle, Virginia, and many, many more things, but I think many of them educational, as in educating our youth and educating adults and educating the society on issues. But first of all, let me welcome Wes Bellamy. Wes, how are you? It's my pleasure. You're all over the internet and all over Charlottesville and Albemarle, and you ran once for city council, right? And it was a tie for quite a while or something, and they had to figure it out.
Yes, sir.
It
was the second tie in Virginia state history, and then there were a couple ballots that weren't counted somehow, and then those two votes went to my opponent, but it was a phenomenal experience, to say the least.
It was, and it was phenomenal to watch, let alone to go through. I think you're one of those people, and I mean this sincerely, Wes, you're one of those people who truly you can point to and say, that guy's making a difference in the lives of the community. So let's talk about, I called you for this interview because in the aftermath of Ferguson and also then the report of coming out and police not being indicted with Eric Garner. We all know that the nation has responded to that and still is responding. And peaceful protests, of course, is the way of Dr. Martin Luther King and Gandhi. And I was, as a news reporter, reporting on your vigil on the downtown mall in Charlottesville. Can you tell us, how did that come about?
Sure. It was a phenomenal experience in which we had nearly 400 to 500 people from Charlottesville, Albemarle, from Savannah, Greene, all around Central Virginia come out and show solidarity, and also to show that we are a unified voice, that justice must be served, and that we will continue to fight not only to unify our communities, and as black, white, young, old, Asian, green, blue, whatever your ethnicity or religion or age, whatever it is, we're going to stand unified, and we're going to show not only the rest of Charlottesville and surrounding areas, but the country, that we will come together and that enough is enough. It is time for us to stand up. To answer your question, how did this actually come about? I'll be honest, I didn't want to have a rally. This is my fourth rally that we had in the last 2 years. And I asked several questions from several people about, what are we going to do? Are we going to do something? And I was saying to them, it's not about what are we going to do. We're already doing different things. I just didn't want to have a rally, but the need that I saw from the people, and I actually was talking to a couple of kids, and they said to me, Mr. West, we're looking to you to do something.
Yes.
We need to let our voices be heard. We need to be able to let our frustrations out in a peaceful way, but we need to be able to get it out and show that we care.
Yes.
And that's when I spoke with a few of the pastors in the area, and I said, hey, let's pull it together. So it really came about in just a matter of about 2 or 3 days. The beauty of social media, being able to put the word out and everybody sharing it, and we were able to come together and show a united front. But not just rally, also have specific demands and requests that we took to Charlottesville City Council that they agreed to adhere to. So it's been very positive.
I know that because, again, I was reporting on it, and it just seemed to come out of nowhere. All of a sudden it was there. It was different. You are demanding of City Council to hear you and to respond to the needs of the community. But I also, not that other events haven't had speakers, you know, but from what I reported on, there seemed to be people there who were speaking from the heart of their own personal experiences. In other words, not famous speakers, or but people who live and brought their children, too. Tell us about that.
Right. Yes, yes. We didn't have any big names, quote unquote, no one who, you know, would essentially, or to a certain degree, bring a large crowd. They were, for the most part, every regular day Joe Blows, every regular citizens, you know.
Yes.
We had people representing several different communities, and as you just alluded to, they spoke from their heart, and that's kind of what we wanted. When I was reaching out to different people, and I said, several different people who spoke were asking me, you know, well, what do you want me to speak about? And I said, you know, there's no topic. I want you to speak from your heart, because that's genuine. And what we saw was, again, the entire community.
Yes.
And the speakers, if you look at the makeup, you had individuals who were homosexuals, people who were black, people who were white. You had young people, you had older people, people from Charlottesville, not from Charlottesville, at UVA. You know, just a lot of different people saying that the community is ready to stand together and that enough is enough. We have to stand united, and we want to see a change, and we will get a change. I'm very confident of that.
You know, I want to share some. When I first arrived in Charlottesville, I came from New York as you know, had been on television, and I was a director primarily of video and theater, etc. So when I got here, I thought, okay, well, I'm going to continue to do that, and this was going to be an exciting thing. And I picked some shows. But when I held auditions, no black actors showed up, which is very, you know, for someone coming from New York, that's, you know, we get 500 people of all different colors that you could imagine and ages. So I didn't know what to make of that. And I, for a couple of years, I would change the shows according, you know, to who showed up, et cetera. But then I started asking people, and forgive me, I don't mean to be, I hope you don't take this the wrong way, but I began to say, well, where are the black people? Because
No. That's a question that literally every black person who moves here from other places, they say the same thing for about the first 2 weeks. So, you're not offending me.
Because, you know, and when I and I don't want to quote Maurice Jones necessarily, because this conversation was over a year ago, and I don't know that I could quote him accurately, but basically it was, well, there is an issue about there sort of being people being sort of segregated, neighborhoods segregated from one another, and that was something too that was unusual for me, because in New York or D.C., where I grew up, or around D.C. anyway, you can walk from two blocks and then and you're in an entirely different situation, and you walk another two blocks, and you know, and I'm used to that harmony, if you will. What I'm getting at, my question is that you seem to be able to gather the rainbow when you do things. As you say, all ages, you know, all sexual persuasions, colors, creeds, backgrounds, educational levels, they come to these vigils, these rallies. And what is it? How do you explain that?
Well, I've tried to be very deliberate in terms of touching and reaching out to several different communities. Specifically, I spent a great deal of time when I first moved to Charlottesville in the African-American community, specifically the low-income housing development in Charlottesville. Spent a lot of time just trying to build and form relationships, build rapport with different people, children, families, adults, so on and so forth. And then the past couple of years, especially since the city council race, I've been able to mix and intertwine with other individuals and give them an opportunity to kind of get to know me, as well as I get a chance to get to know their communities. When you have a base of sorts, you can kind of spread your message and let individuals know. I try to be as genuine as possible, and I try to be transparent. I think people are starting to feel that I am transparent, and let them know, you know, I, while I, I've obviously I'm a black man, and I have an affinity, a special affinity for individuals who look like me.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, I could really care less what you look like.
Uh-huh.
It's about what are we going to do to make our community best, because in my classroom and the kids that I teach, they're not all black, they're not all white,
yes,
they're not all Latino, they're a mix. And those kids, when I speak to them, they really don't care as much that I'm a black man.
Uh-huh.
They really just want to know whether or not if Mr. B is going to be a good teacher.
Yes.
And I think that's what we really need to get to. Yes, race is important, but what's more important is can we actually show our young people that we're going to create a community that is conducive and one that enables them to be productive assets to society. Because I have a 5-year-old daughter, and I have mentees who are range in age. My young kids range from ages 5 up to 20.
Mm.
I want them to be able to live, and I'm only 28, but I want my kids when I'm 20 years old, or when they're 28 years old, to be able to live in a place that welcomes all. I want my child,
yes,
to be able to play with your child or,
yes,
your grandchild. I want my mentees to be able to play with, you know, white kids, black kids, Asian kids, whatever.
Yes.
I want everybody to be able to play together.
And not
that really shows. Oh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. And not have it be a big deal, one way or the other.
I grew up in Atlanta, where, you know, similar to New York, while we may have, I think we may have more African Americans. My high school had 62 nationalities.
Wow.
So each someone who looked different, it really wasn't a big deal.
Exactly.
I mean, you look different, but you're really just a boy or,
yes,
you're a girl.
Yes.
Like, who cares what you look like?
Yes.
And that's really what we got to get through here in Charlotte. But I think we're getting there. It's just going to take some time.
And, you know, I think in a university town, University of Virginia is in Charlottesville, for those listening outside of this area, you get in a university, generally, a plethora of different personalities and lifestyles, et cetera, that would be a catalyst. And the university does, I guess, what it can, or we all think everybody can. We can all do better, so we'll leave that at that. But in a place like Charlottesville, I just expected this would be easier. And I'm not saying it's as tough as it is in other places, but I know you've been at this for some time and haven't always gotten the support, I think.
Quite the contrary to a certain degree, because while Thomas Jefferson, many individuals will say that he is one of the top 10 or top 5 Americans to ever walk the planet,
yes,
he was also a very a troubled individual. I mean, and all we are to a certain degree.
Yes, yes.
So you think about the University of Virginia, a place in which Thomas Jefferson founded. However, for him to be such a phenomenal educator and done several different things to our country, he also owned slaves.
Yes.
He also, had children with his slaves.
Yes.
He didn't free his slaves except for one. So, I mean, this area was founded based on that.
That's
here's
a good point.
The other thing I think we have to take into account, and for whatever, right, wrong, or indifferent, we have to be honest about this.
Yes.
America was founded, or America essentially had nearly 250 years of slavery, followed by 100 years of Jim Crow, followed by another 50 or so years of redlining and individuals not having their civil rights. We're only two generations removed from Jim Crow. We're only two generations removed from Jim Crow. Those things don't go away overnight. Okay? So that's kind of the battle that we're facing. All of that history, all of that lineage, we're still fighting those same battles for justice and injustice. However, things are moving in the right direction. Now, again, when we put things into the proper context, we are not going to have everyone singing Kumbaya, my Lord, together overnight.
Yes.
That's just not the reality. Some people are going to see things their way. Some people will see me in a certain way, although I may wear a shirt and a suit and tie every day, and I make sure I do different things to bring the community together.
Uh-huh.
Some people are still just going to see me in a certain light, and that's okay, because that's how they were brought up. That's what they feel. We can't focus on those individuals. We have to focus on the individuals who look to move the city and the country as a whole forward. And I think the country Charlottesville specifically is starting to turn around.
Yes, I agree. And I find hope in your reminder. I mean, I'm a history buff too, and I know what you were saying, but yet hearing you say it, I am reminded we really are infants when it comes to equality.
We're really in the baby stages, very, very baby stages. So, you know, the child doesn't get to start running overnight. First you have to crawl, then first they have to learn to pick their head up, then they can crawl, then they can walk, then they can run. So, you know, we're still in the infant stages, but we'll be okay. We'll get there.
And I love your optimism and your activism as well. Tell me, what do you teach at Albemarle High?
Well, I teach two courses, one computer science and another course entitled Ethnic Study. So in both of those courses, we get a chance to kind of have the best of both worlds.
Yes.
The computer science world, you know, the key, again, computer science and programming has no race.
Exactly.
You can look like whatever you want to look like. It's about whether or not you know what you're doing with the being able to code. So that helps out a great deal. In the ethnic studies class, it's more so teaching our students, and that's of several different ethnicities, because we have white kids, black kids, we even have a couple Latino kids in the course.
Uh-huh.
And we're showing them our history, our country's history from a different perspective.
Yes.
And also showing them their true cultural. Providing them with some cultural awareness. You know, for many African American kids, they don't know their history.
Yes.
For many of them, they've been taught, and I too was guilty of it growing up in high school. We thought that our history started with slavery.
Yes.
Well, that's not true.
Exactly.
You know, we didn't know of the great pioneers and the people who have done phenomenal work, such as W. E. Du Bois, Frederick Douglass, and Booker T. Washington. And even King Tut, people over in Africa, such as Mesopotamia, so on and so forth, they don't know of those things. So we don't teach them it. They'll never know it.
You
think about what comes when you have cultural pride.
Yes.
When you have a pride of yourself and you know who you are, you start to conduct yourself in a different manner. You kind of walk with a different aura.
Absolutely.
And that's kind of what we're trying to instill in our kids.
And that brings us to hype, but I want to wait for the next segment for that, because that's an awesome movement, if you will, program that you have founded. But before that, this Justice for All, clearly, as you and I talk, there's no question we feel that way. And as you say, we're never going to make everyone feel that way. But there are many people, and often we forget to mention Native Americans and Asians, but there are many people in this country who don't look like the people on the money, I think they all want a voice. Some have more of a voice than others. They all deserve a voice, and here you come along, and among others, and you call yourself a child of God. I think that's evident. That's a tricky. Why don't we go out on that? You know, I really, because I believe in God. I'm not the greatest Roman Catholic, but I believe in God. I pray the rosary. I know I'm taken care of. I know there's something beyond me. There's no question. So I find it particularly disappointing is a nice word. I find it particularly disappointing when people profess their belief in a supreme being by feeling superior to their other human beings. Give us a few words on that.
Well, again, as you alluded to, I mean, child of God, I think that is something that we all are, you know.
Yes.
And some people may feel different ways, but I think when you say a child of God, that can apply to whether or not you are a Muslim, whether or not you are a Roman Catholic, whether you're Baptist, you're Christian, you know, Buddha, whatever.
Yes.
You know, you all believe in a higher being. And I think that if we can begin to start looking at each other in that way, that we are all, you know, children of the Creator, whoever you pray to, or whoever your Creator is, then we can start to see each other as equals. But again, we have to think about this. Now, our world, not just the country, but our world has had religious battles for centuries.
Yes, yes.
Those things do not change overnight. It takes a process. But the more and more we can continue to fight, the more and more we continue to chip at it, the more and more we continue to unify and work together, and people like yourself, like myself, your friends, my friends, our families, start to intertwine and talk with each other, then we will see the change.
Excellent. We're going to go out on that. Thank you, Wes. That is a absolutely beautiful and inspiring and uplifting way to end this first segment. Stay with us, everyone. We'll be right back with Wes Bellamy. There is so much more to talk about. Stay with us.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Andy Film Minute. What would you call a film that took 12 years to complete? In this case, nothing short of a cinematic masterpiece. Richard Linklater began shooting Boyhood in 2002 when his star, Eller Coltrane, was not yet 8 and adorable in his innocence. When the film wrapped in 2013, Mason, Eller's character, was 18. He had weathered good days and bad, demonstrated a wide range of behavior, both good and bad, and headed off to college. Mason was a typical American youth. There's nothing radically different about him. His problems are simply recognizable as challenges of growing up in America today. The genius of the film resides in its almost time-lapse elements. Incredibly, Linklater completed Boyhood in 39 days of actual filming, meeting once a year for only a few days. It will be remembered as special for capturing the passage of time more comprehensively than any other coming-of-age film is ever again likely to do. We watch the same actors gradually morph physically and emotionally into who they will unpredictably become. The process offers us a universal picture of how time and life experience changes us, how the human animal matures, and how American cultural values have evolved. The payoff? A singularly unique work of artistry. Boyhood. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. I am having an uplifting, inspiring, educational, all-inclusive conversation with Wes Bellamy. I think he is an educator in everything he does. He has been a political candidate, certainly an activist for the community, primarily located in Charlottesville and Albemarle County, but he speaks to global issues. And so we want to talk about the Young Black Professional Network, which I assume is for adults. Ben, you are the founder and chairman of HYPE, which is helping young people evolve. So can I deduce from that it's your intention to make certain everybody gets the word?
You're absolutely right. And when you look at the organization, the Young Black Professional Network, we mean young by something new and fresh.
Uh-huh.
And then, and furthermore, we have a few white people in the Young Black Professional Network also.
Oh, great.
You know, it's all encompassing. It's not segregated.
Uh-huh.
We want to try and reach as many people as we can. And you know, that question that you brought up earlier during the last segment in regards to many people saying when they come to Charlottesville and they ask that question, where are the black people?
Yes.
That's kind of the void that we're looking to fill.
Uh-huh.
We had an event 2 weeks ago, in early December, in which we had a private event just mainly for members and a few of our friends. And we packed in maybe about 100 or so African Americans and a few white people in one in particular restaurant. And it was amazing to hear people say the same thing. Goodness, I didn't even know all of these black people were around.
I know. It's a shame, but it's true. You know, we have to fix that.
Right. Well, we have to do a better job of becoming more visible.
Yes.
But that too is a little difficult when individuals feel as if they may not be as welcome, or they don't see the people who look like them in their proximity. So
yes,
that's kind of the void we're looking to fill in regards to HYPE, Helping Young People Evolve. That's my baby.
Yes.
You know, we started that back in 2011, and we started with 2 kids. Now we're up to around 40 kids, and we have 2 locations, another location down in Columbia, South Carolina, which is where I am right now.
Oh.
Our co-job that we have here, we're going to give away about 3,000 coats shortly. We're actually on Saturday. Youth is my goal. I want to build up our little ones because they are truly the future, and someone poured into me, so I just want to do the same thing.
What I'm liking here is, you know, we always say, catch them young. I'm going to share something with you. I have no degree in history. I've just always loved history, and I have have been a long-term substitute teacher years ago in history classes and social studies because I knew it, because I loved it, and I read about it even as a kid. But I have to say, long after finishing graduate school and off in New York and doing my thing, I was so busy I started listening to books more than reading them. But the point of this is, all of a sudden I realized I wasn't teaching history at all. I was teaching this little slice over here, and there was this whole other thing. And I met a man about the same time, John Brown. And John Brown used to be very proud in his witty way of being named after the abolitionist. John Brown was black, and John Brown was one of my greatest educators, because we could sit across the table in a lunch or whatever. He was a Republican, by the way, and his wife a Democrat. But he would, you know, I had these questions, and even when I didn't know the question, he could tell, and he'd say, you know what, you want to know what that came from, right? You want to know why that's the response, or why this? And he taught me things like cracker. He says, you know what, why would we call you cracker? And I said, no, you know, because, you know, I hadn't lived in the South and no one ever called me cracker one way or the other. But I knew that word, and I knew it was, I mean, I didn't know what it meant. But he told me, because the white slave owners had people who worked for them, and there was a guy with a whip, and when you didn't move fast enough, he cracked the whip. And the slaves called them crackers. Well, there were many, many stories like that. And the more he told me, I would sit there, and all I could think, Wes, was what a waste that we haven't recognized all these other cultures that are right here and have been here from the beginning, and pull those cultures in to enrich what we are doing and who we are as a country. I know you've got a lot to say about that. Take it.
Well, undoubtedly, you know, there's a lot of different things, or a lot of different people who aren't mentioned and who don't normally get a chance to have their stories told, their lineage, their history, their cultures told in our current history textbooks. However, that too may be by design, some individuals will say, because, you know, when an individual starts to learn about their culture and their history, then they truly become empowered and
yes.
They know about themselves.
Yes.
So, you know that's part of the beast that we're fighting, the quote-unquote beast that we are up against. But, you know, what's most important is for the individuals who do know.
Yes.
Because there's adults, there's children, there's a lot of people who are ignorant to the fact of their culture, and not ignorant in a derogatory sense, but just ignorant from the fact that they don't know.
Yes.
But for those who do know, we have an obligation. We have an oral and an educational obligation to spread that knowledge.
Yes.
And I think in today's age, we are starting to see more individuals do so. I think that is also part of the reason why you see so many African Americans starting charter schools.
Yes.
So that they can indeed pass that knowledge and that lineage down.
Uh-huh.
So that they can show those examples. And that's what it's going to take. Us continuing to work together, us continuing for those who have the knowledge to pass it along, to make sure that we inspire our little ones.
Mm. Speaking of charter schools, what are your thoughts about the Jefferson School City Center and, in particular, the African American Heritage Center there?
Yeah, I absolutely love it. I adore it. I must send some kudos and some love to Ms. Andrea Douglas, the director over there. And I would be remiss if I didn't say this name, Ms. Teresa Price, who is an elder in the community, and she spends a great deal of time over there. She would beat me up.
Yeah.
If she heard this, if she heard this, and I didn't give my love to her, she would smack me over the head. I'm literally about 90 years old, but she would definitely get me. So I love you, Ms. Teresa Bike. Back to the school, that there's so much history and culture in that school. We actually just took a field trip to the group, our ethnic studies class, and I'm from high school.
Excellent.
Over there earlier in the year.
Yeah.
Yeah, and got a chance to tour it. Got a chance to hear some stories from individuals who actually went to the school, who got a chance to really tell what the school was really all about.
Yes.
And to see the looks on the children's faces was priceless. And that's what we must continue to do. You know, that center has a lot of history. And I know Andrea's been doing a ton of different things to try to get the community involved.
Yes.
And I'm looking forward to seeing what happens in the year 2015.
I know. And she needs some help. You know, she works 7 days a week, Andrea Douglas. I had the great pleasure of meeting Andrea. We were in the building before the restoration took place, and the building being Jefferson School City Center. Here we are in 30 degrees, and we can see the skeleton of what was, and now they're talking about incorporating state-of-the-art with the history. Andrea asked us to come to make a video about the Jefferson School City Center and the Heritage Center, and we did. What I've loved was seeing how they've married the past and present and future. It is so impressive.
Right.
And it's a magnet.
Right.
And I'm so glad to hear you took your students there. How is helping young people evolve? Tell me more about that. I just find that so fascinating. And
sure.
They must light up when they hear their real history.
Oh, undoubtedly. HYPE is an acronym for, as you alluded to, helping young people evolve. We're a boxing and mentoring program for kids ages 5 up to 18, and actually we have a 19-year-old right now.
Uh-huh.
And we're predicated around discipline, instilling discipline in our children, getting them physically fit, and empowering them. Mm-hmm. Now, in addition to the boxing program, we have a step team component. And during that step team, we have about 9 young ladies, and those young ladies travel different places, and they go out and they step and do a lot of different things. And that's more so women's empowerment.
Uh-huh.
Now, I don't lead the women's empowerment portion because I'm not a woman.
Uh-huh.
I can't necessarily tell them how to be a woman. So we have a few different sororities come over from the university, and different ladies in the community help out with that. But the program is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, we've seen a raise or a jump in our GPA, our cumulative GPA, from 1.8 when we first started
uh-huh.
to 3.2 right now.
Wow.
So, I mean, we've seen a huge jump. And that comes when children get discipline.
Yes.
Which what I've found to believe is that many of them are actually looking for discipline.
Yes.
And
yes.
when they become disciplined and they see the love, you start to see the change in several different capacities of their life, in several different facets of their life, rather. So,
you know,
it's been a phenomenal journey. I'm very pleased with the program.
It's and it captures, it seems to me, as you say, the discipline, love, and direction, a focus, a goals, and the solution is an education. Either you get an education and that's the way to the solutions, or you are denied that education or don't get it for whatever reason, and that's where you're kept at a level that creates more and more problems. But the moment you show a child a sense of past and present and give them hope through their education and learning about themselves and the world and how they fit, it's just so impressive, Wes. What's next for you?
Well, next up, we're actually gearing up for another run at City Council,
uh-huh.
Charlottesville City Council. So we're putting the final touches on that campaign. We got our cabinet together. And actually, on January 10th, before we actually announced for City Council,
uh-huh.
we're going to have a statewide March for Justice in Richmond.
Uh-huh.
So that will begin at 3 o'clock, and we'll be going from the old slave jail, which is Shackle Bottom, and we'll be walking from the slave jail to the Capitol Building, which is about a half of a mile.
Wow.
And we'll be March for Law, March for Justice. We're asking different people from all across the state to come out. Let's stand together in unity, and let's show that all lives matter. In addition to that, start talking to each other and start having the conversation and breaking down some of these barriers. So we'll be going from there. We'll have our list of demands or requests, and we'll be taking them to the General Assembly on January 27th. So we'll be taking our request known to the General Assembly. And we will go from there.
Tell us, do you have a website or somehow that people, we can get information on how to be involved with this?
Yes. You can email me directly at WesBellamy1, that's WesBellamy1 at gmail.com. Or you can always look us up on HYPE at the HYPE website. That's helpingyoungpeopleevolve.com. All one word, all together. That's helpingyoungpeopleevolve.com. Also, you can look us up at Young Black Professional Network online, YBPNCVILLE.org. So one of those those ways you'll be able to get in contact with me for sure.
And excellent. And I would add also that one can type West Bellamy, Charlottesville, or even West Bellamy Downtown Mall, and you can find your way to you.
Yeah. I'm not a hard guy to find. That's
I know the other night was not the first time you've been on the Downtown Mall gathering a group of people peacefully to start communion and communication. You've been involved at least since Trayvon Martin, Stand Your Ground, Michael Brown, of course, Ferguson, and Eric Garner. I don't even know how to begin to talk about people showing up with shirts saying, "I can breathe." As you say, we can't reach everybody, but I have friends and whose sons are involved in law enforcement around the world, as well as in their states. I know personally a young man with young family who was a Capitol policeman. So it's not that I don't know good law enforcement people of every color, and they work hard and protect us and try to, you know, raise a family just like all the rest of us are doing. But there is an imbalance, it seems to me, and where there is that imbalance, all sides need to not be fighting with each other about it, but rather working together to solve it. And this child, Tamir Rice, when I saw that on the news and, you know, in the video, when a child of any color cannot go sit in a park and read and know that he's going to go home that night and have dinner with his family, talk to me, Wes.
Right.
What are we going to do?
Well, it's difficult. It's very difficult. And sometimes you feel like you're talking to a wall when you're speaking to some people about these things. I've been engaging in a Facebook conversation that has been ongoing for seems like a few weeks now on one particular thread, trying to get different individuals to understand. Now, when you talk about little Tamir Rice up in Cleveland, Ohio, several things come to mind when we talk about what is wrong with that entire picture. But I will admit, first and foremost, there's no reason for him to be playing with a play gun in a park with people. That's the first thing. That's where it comes with individuals like myself, the elders in the community, his mentors, his parents, whomever, need to say, you know, young man, this is not something that you do.
Yes.
Now,
not take off the little red button that, you know. But
right. Now, aside from that, and of course, we have to make sure we keep that in mind.
Yes.
But aside from that, when police officers take a stand and they feel as if because of the color of your skin, or that may be the way that it's appearing, that because of the color of your skin, you are immediately a threat.
Yes.
And you are shot and killed. And I saw a count that it was 2.4 seconds in which the kid, in which the cops got out the car and they shot him. They didn't give him an opportunity to say that it was a toy. They didn't give him an opportunity to say that, you know, I'm only 12.
Yes.
There was no opportunity to do any of those things. He was just shot and killed.
Yeah.
That symbolizes that we have a problem.
Yes.
You know, what seems to be the big problem is that there is a fear of African-Americans, and particularly African-American males.
Nah.
So how do we get over that fear? Because that's what I'm hearing from several different brothers. I hear that from several different people. They're afraid of us. They're scared of us. Why are you afraid of me? Why can't I walk down the street just like anybody else? Why are you so afraid of me? And I think the media has played a role in that. There's several different things that's wrong with that picture.
Mm-hmm.
However, if we don't start talking to each other, then we will not get anywhere. Until police officers and community members can stop saying that it's us versus them, we will not get anywhere. And I think that these issues of late have forced us to look at ourselves in the mirror as a country and say that this has to stop.
Yeah.
So that while I am very disappointed and saddened by the events that have transpired, I am somewhat happy that they have occurred. These people who have been killed have become martyrs, in my opinion, because they have forced our communities to start to talk to each other. And as unfortunate as that has to be, and as fortunate as that sounds, as bad as that sounds, we have now got to a point where we must start to communicate with each other.
it has brought us all to at least go, you know, we can't pretend it away. It is, and I do think as long as a rainbow of people show up and protest peacefully, this is not going away, nor should it, and people are not going to ignore it. I also link all of this with, I believe firmly, in following the money. There is a money power that sees an advantage to keeping people, and I'm going to say the phrase, in their place. But when you lie down in the street or in a big mall where the bottom line of corporatism is affected, then the people who have the power to make change are going to take notice. I think we've entered into a new phase, and I hope it takes wing. Any parting words for us, Wes? I feel you're doing so much on so many levels, in the classroom, on the street, downtown mall, in city council.
I appreciate that. I would say as a parting word, we must stay encouraged. The events that have occurred lately and that have transpired lately, it is kind of their job and their responsibility to break our spirits, but we will not allow them to break our spirits. We will come, we will look back a year, 2 years, 10 years from this time period and say that this unified us.
Yes.
This brought us together.
Yes.
This was the moment in our generation, in our time, that really catapulted us to move forward. So stay encouraged.
Yes.
Stay optimistic and talk to each other.
Yes.
Nothing more, nothing less.
All right. Wes Bellamy, thank you. I so appreciate your being on the show and your message and all your activism and your advocacy and your help for young people and young professionals and all of us, bringing us together, showing us the way. You lead by example, and it is an example I hope more will follow. Thank you so much, Wes, for being on the show, and all the best to you.
Yes, sir.
Bye now.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Stay with us as we'll be right back with a final comment from the Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery. Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Today's film will give you plenty of food for thought. The Donnie Darko screenplay was making the rounds in Hollywood while its writer and eventual director was still in film school. Though greatly admired by the most prestigious producers, it was simply too mind-bending a project to undertake. Then, strangely enough, it was Drew Barrymore's fledgling production company that eventually took the chance and brought it to life. The film made no big splash in the theaters, but it soon became a cult hit, much loved by an ever-growing cadre of film fans. Donnie, played by a young Jake Gyllenhaal, is either fighting mental illness or somehow tuned into some alternate reality. A man in a bunny suit shares with him that the end of the world is near. An airplane engine crashes into his bedroom, but the government has no record of any accident. Perhaps time travel will provide him with answers. What is going on here? There is little argument that Donnie Darko is a fine film, intelligently written, well acted, well produced, and extraordinarily well constructed. That being said, there is little consensus as to what it's all about. When a true artist takes us on an intriguing journey and then leaves us wondering where we've been, that's a great film. Independent film, where the real stories are told. You can find us on the web at www.indiefilmminute.com.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us and becoming one of the reasonable voices heard around the world. In thanksgiving for Ferguson tragedy. My mother always said you get smarter the more you think for yourself, so be thankful for tragedy. Dad said, when you stop at an intersection, look at the driver of the other car, not the car. When things broke down, Uncle Gino explained, it's gone Republican on me. But my grandmama haunts me still with, each of us has a definite major purpose, but timing is divine. Whether plopping down our money, our votes, or on our sofa, we are always falling for corporatism's sales pitch and politicians promising change, as if change eluded the masses, but the favored few could capture and deliver it at the bottom of a pot of gold, rarely conceiving it's we who change the direction, not the car, we who make the magic, not the stars, we who are both instruments and music, not financiers conducting bottom lines of tone-deaf members of Congress. Grief-stricken, we believed America was changed forever on 9/11. Then came Katrina flyover, screams of Sandy Hook children and teachers, and Christie tucking away millions of Hurricane Sandy relief, with little evidence of change. But despite GW's Great Recession, Boston Marathon bombers failed to keep us from crossing the finish line. And though politicians, fearful of equitable, affordable health care for all, accepted millions of election dollars to change it, and voters went Republican on us, thankfully, they lost legal ground on voter ID laws, same-sex marriage, and preventing executive orders. As we lift ourselves up out of the ashes of attempted suicide by midterm election, change we can believe in materializes. Whether turkey sandwiches or moonlit belly bird-filled racing to preempt Friday hangovers before stuffing shoppers the day after taking from Indian givers, whether manhandling our way through pretend sales or being stepped over by bargain hunters, the almighty dollar keeps we, the consumers, at the top of the food chain. Thankful yet? Thankful for hands raised, hearts full, Immokalee farm workers and president unshackled from frightened corporate conservatives contributing billions to obstruct America's future. In their self-made rut, conservatives beckon us downward with manipulative TV ads, questionable prosecutors, sportsmanlike wife beaters, and lawless law enforcement without name tags or body cameras to assist in our own national burial. Ferguson, 2014 midterm, and mud-crawling immigrant children show us the way up and the way out. Over-consumers discover non-consuming power overpowers fire-consuming riots. Something has changed. Finally, a hint of national repulsion over raped daughters and gunned-downed sons. For a nation no longer quite dipped in the economic sauce of, by, and for the turkeys at the top, who, with malice aforethought, based our American dream with massive foreclosure fraud, I give thanks. In Thanksgiving for Moral Mondays, Giving Tuesdays, and all those recognizing the good still outnumber the bankers, let us be grateful. Thank migrant workers harvesting our food, and Pope Francis embracing communion between evolution and Eden. Anyone can keep the faith when there is no rape, racism, violence, police state, abduction with intent to defile, corporatism, or OK Corral-style gunning down of our youth in city parks. If it was easy, anyone could maintain strength of character. But our measure is revealed whether we're leaving unarmed gunshot victims in the street for hours, burning police cars, or peacefully facing the root cause of our dissonance. Those people who benefit most from dividing us. The eminence of a nation is determined by the humanity of its people, not by life's roller coaster ride, but in how well, helping each other, we navigate the comedies and tragedies in our pursuit of solid rock on which to stand. If we allow, tragedies like Ferguson, 2014 voter ID sham, and Sabrina Elderly's Rolling Stone revelation about the University of Virginia will ignite in us the wisdom to turn ourselves around, to boycott perpetrators rather than demonize the persecuted. When Main Street rises above the manipulation of Madison Avenue, we regain balanced and principled footing. Then we will occupy the high ground and give notice to corporatism's political puppets, we have overcome. Join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Thank you.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of the Reasonable Voice. Voice.com website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I am Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard around the world.